Hello, and welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please visit the website at eseletc.com. There you'll find a variety of ESL and EFL materials, including a lot of activities aimed at bringing global issues and activism into the classroom. Sorry for getting this week's show out a little bit late. Basically, I tried to do an interview for this week's show. I interviewed Kira about her Earth Day activity that has become the secondhand gift exchange. And unfortunately, the sound wasn't quite good enough. So I'm going to interview her again, hopefully for next week. So we should have that podcast up soon. This week, though, I'm going to talk about a couple of activities from my own classes. I'm going to begin with an activity that deals with a recent news story. I'm not sure how much coverage this has gotten internationally. And really, I'm not sure how much coverage it's gotten in China, but there's a clip on YouTube that shows some Beijing high school students misbehaving. And so I did a discussion activity based on that. The second thing I'm going to talk about this week is I've got an upcoming job where I'm going to be teaching teachers. So I'm going to explain a little bit about that job and then ask for help. So if any of you have any experience doing that kind of thing or any suggestions, I'd love to hear them. So I'll tell you about what that will entail shortly. Then I'll talk about another activity that I did this past week about athletes and money. So to follow up on the money activities that we did the previous week. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about is a website that I found called Dropping Knowledge, which is kind of an interesting website, has some interesting information on it. And the format, the way that the information was collected, is itself kind of interesting and could be the basis for a classroom activity. First, let me talk about the discussion that we did based on that YouTube video clip. So if you want to see the video clip, you can go to YouTube and search for Beijing Boy. Put it in quotes. I'll also link to it from the show notes for this podcast. So if you go to eseletc.com, click on podcast, this is show number 12. And in the show notes, you can find all the links to any of the materials I talk about. I found out about this story from a website called the How How Report. That's H-A-O-H-A-O. That means good in Chinese. That's a really neat website if you're interested in following internet content related to China. They have news stories up there, and then they have more kind of personal anecdotal stuff up there too. And the way it's set up, I believe it's like Dig or Slashdot or one of those types of things. I'm not really familiar with those sites, but the way the How How Report works is members will submit a blog or a news story or some sort of content dealing with China, and then the other members in the group vote on it, and the more popular ones percolate to the top of the page, and the other ones are forgotten. And it's kind of a neat, I have some news alerts in my set up through Google News about different types of Chinese news, but the How How Report is really, they have a lot of stuff that I haven't seen doing news searches in Yahoo or Google, and it's just kind of a nice balance to that. So anyways, there's this story where some students in Beijing, I believe, according to my students, that this is in some sort of vocational school. So it's a school where students go after junior high school for 5 years, and then they graduate with some sort of vocational degree. And this is a video clip taken, I believe, using a cell phone during class. And it's about 4 minutes long, and it just shows the class in utter chaos. You have an old teacher, maybe, you know, mid-60s to late-60s, in the front of the room, in kind of the corner, and he's basically talking to about 5 students in the front corner of the room. And then the student holding the camera kind of pans around, and you can just see the whole rest of the classroom, no one is paying attention. People are text messaging, people are making faces at the camera, people are putting on makeup, talking on the phone, sleeping, eating, reading books, all the things that as a teacher you don't want your students to be doing. Seeing that image of a classroom was kind of interesting for me because I get frustrated sometimes in my own classroom when, you know, 1 or 2 students is text messaging, and to see this just rampant ignoring of the teacher really kind of put it in perspective for me. I was shocked by that when I first came over here too, because I expected, you know, I guess I had this stereotype in my mind about Chinese students would be very disciplined and respectful and all that stuff. But anyways, this is nothing. This is just the beginning. So you see these students not paying attention, and then a boy sitting in the front of the room stands up, walks over to the teacher, who, as I said, is this older man, and tries to grab his hat. And the teacher kind of pulls away and scolds the boy, and the boy sits down. And then, you know, the guy with the camera kind of walks around the classroom, you know, getting people to pose for the camera. Another student in the back of the room starts throwing his water bottle up towards the teacher and misses a couple times, and students return the bottle to him and he throws it again. It eventually hits the board and really startles the teacher. And then the end of the video, the boy that got up and tried to take the hat at the beginning goes up and kind of makes as if to smack the teacher. And news reports say he was swearing at the teacher during that time. I couldn't understand that, so perhaps that's true. I'm not sure. But you can clearly see the teacher flinch in fear. And that's, when I watched that, it really made me, well, it made me sad, because as a teacher, you know, it's when you feel that kind of loss of control, it's really a terrible feeling and kind of a scary feeling. And I have a class that I'm struggling with, that's, you know, 94 students, and they're not English majors, and they don't care about what we're doing. And, you know, especially from some of the guys in that class, I get some of that too cool for school attitude. And to see how far this can go was, it bothered me, also made me really angry. To see a teacher be physically intimidated was really, really bothered me, and I felt really sorry for him. So what I did, I saw this video last weekend, and I actually hadn't really planned a lesson on it, but I just went into my first class last week and asked them if they had seen the video. And none of my students had seen the video, but all of my students had heard about their video. I guess a teacher of theirs had talked about it. And I thought, well, this will be kind of interesting. I'll ask them to tell me about the video, and so I did. And the teacher didn't give them a lot of information. Basically, the answer that I got, and I got this answer in all my classes, was that the video showed students quarreling with a teacher. I don't think that's a really accurate description. In most of my classes, though, one or two students had seen a newspaper article about the video, and they had a much clearer understanding of what happened. So I had those students explain it to the class of what had happened in the video. Then what I did is I decided that this is going to be, it seems like the students are interested in this, so this might be a good thing to talk about. So what I did was I wrote some discussion questions on the board. I came up with these kind of on the spot because, like I said, I wasn't planning to do an activity on this, but they worked pretty well, and they kind of do what I want to do in that they move from a more personal or more literal questions to more critical or analytical type of questions. But it still maybe is a little bit, jumps around a little bit. The first question that I asked them was, is this behavior unusual? So we talked about what happened in the video, and I asked them, is that kind of thing unusual in high schools in China? At the time, I thought it was a high school. I only found out in my last class that it was a vocational school. The next question that I asked was, how did students usually behave in your high school? So I asked students to talk about the discipline side of their high school classes. I then asked what they thought the punishment should be for those students. And finally, and this is the more critical question, I asked why they thought students would act that way. It was interesting to hear about their high schools. It wasn't particularly surprising, though. You know, I heard that most of the students worked hard and listened to the teacher. About 30% didn't. And didn't pay attention, sent text messages, didn't do homework, that kind of stuff, which is similar to college. I'd say it could be higher than 30% in some of my classes, particularly in my non-English major classes. But, you know, at the same time, this isn't a top-tier school, so that kind of makes sense. The other thing that was interesting was hearing students' ideas about why students would behave this way. One thing that came up in maybe in all of my classes was the idea that the teacher could have brought it on himself in some way, perhaps by playing favorites or being unfair to the students. And I thought that was, now, admittedly, they hadn't seen the video, but I thought that was an interesting point to make and not something that I had thought of. Another idea that came up a lot was that Chinese society has changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years, but the education system hasn't. And so maybe the society and the education system don't match. And that's something that I've heard a lot in my classes, and I think shows a certain degree of understanding by my students. This isn't necessarily any evidence of critical thinking, though, because it could just be, you know, everyone says this and they're just repeating it. I'm not sure. But it seems to be true either way. And then the last thing that several students offered as an idea for this question, I think, came from the news article, because it was in the news article that I read. And it's the idea that China has a combination here of rapid economic development and families with only one child. Because as you probably know, China has a one-child policy where families are only allowed to have one child. And of course, rich people, you can pay to have more. And if you live in the countryside and are a farmer, you can also have more. But for city dwellers, there's a one-child policy, and it's strictly enforced. So what that means, though, is that there's a whole generation that are growing up with more money and being an only child. And what that seems to mean in a lot of families is that children here are spoiled a lot of times. And that was a vocabulary word that I taught my students. They described spoiled. You know, they said the parents never say no and they buy them many things. And then I gave them that vocabulary word. Personally, my students haven't been really disrespectful. They've actually been really pretty nice. They don't, their actions aren't great. You know, they might not do their homework and they might try to text message in class. But when you talk to them, they're very respectful. There's another thing that came up when Kira and I were talking about question number four. And it's something that I did not bring up in class because I was afraid to. And that's the idea of how teachers were, I don't know what you want to call it, I guess tortured during the Cultural Revolution, where students were encouraged to, you know, put their teachers in their place, and they would mock their teachers. The teachers had to wear a dunce cap. We actually had some friends over for dinner last Friday, and one of them told us how when his grandfather had been in college during the Cultural Revolution, a teacher was denounced, and the next day they found him hanging. And so when I see that behavior in the classroom, it's, you know, if you had a culture where teachers were looked down upon and considered evil and the children were supposed to control them and keep them in their place, it kind of makes sense that you couldn't go from that to having a real robust education system in just 30 years, and that's all that it's been. And that was something that I didn't really know about that before I came here. I had heard of the Cultural Revolution, of course, and I was familiar with how capitalists were treated. But I didn't realize the treatment of teachers had been so extreme. So that was an interesting thing to learn about. Okay, speaking of teachers, let me talk about this job that I've got. I basically got this job against my will, but I don't want to complain here. So suffice to say, the last week of the semester, in addition to teaching my regular classes, I will be doing 17 hours of teacher training spread out over 7 days. So 2 or 3 hours a day, and these are junior high school and senior high school English teachers from the public schools here, and in specifically, these are teachers from underdeveloped areas, so from in the mountains, and that's all I know. I have no instruction about specific things I should work on with them. You know, my boss tells me, well, they never had an opportunity to learn English from a foreigner. Well, you can't learn English from a foreigner in a week. You can't learn English from anybody in a week. Personally, I don't see much of a point to what I'm doing, especially if I focus on trying to improve their English, because as any teacher knows, 17 hours with 20 to 30 students, you're not going to, you know, you could teach them a vocabulary word or something, but you're not going to really help anyone's English in that time. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk to them about teaching English, about how to teach English, because that's something that, you know, maybe I could give them a couple of ideas that might be useful to them, and that's something that I think we could accomplish in such a short amount of time. I don't know if that's going to be what they want. You know, and if they just want to work on, you know, reading sentences and I correct their pronunciation, then so be it. You know, I'm going to do what they want. But if I have any sort of control over what we're doing, that's what I'm going to suggest. I'm going to suggest that we talk about different types of activities and different ways to approach lessons and stuff like that. So I've asked my boss to give me the junior high school and senior high school English textbooks, which I've never seen before. And I've also asked him to tell them to bring their textbooks. And I figure what I'd like to do is ask them to show me how they teach some of the lessons. And then we can talk about some ideas to change it. My purpose in doing that would be to find places that they could give students the opportunity to really use English instead of just listening and repeating. So that's the theory. And aside from the fact that it means I'll be working an awful lot of hours in that week, I'm kind of excited about doing it. I've never taught teachers before, and I like talking about teaching English. Having said that, I also am very well aware that they might not speak English. You know, they're English teachers, but they might not speak much English at all. And I might just find myself standing in the front of the room for 17 hours talking. And that's not how I want to do it. And I'm very aware that that could be how it goes. And the other problem is that, you know, they're teaching for the test. Their students have to do the Gaokao, which is this, I guess that means the high test. That's their college entrance exam. And so these teachers are, you know, less concerned with teaching English than they are with teaching how to take the English part of the test. And I can't help them with that. But ideally, if they have some time during the year that they could spare to actually trying to help students improve their English, I'm going to try to give them some ideas for activities or ways of teaching lessons that they could do that. And as I said at the top of the show, if you have any suggestions at all or any experience doing this kind of thing, I would love to hear it. You can email me at eseletc@gmail.com or go to the website, post in the forums. Anything would be great because, like I said, I don't have experience doing teacher training. One thing that I'm going to do to try to get some ideas this coming week is in my classes with... Half of my classes were off last week, so they didn't do the discussion about those misbehaving students in Beijing. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do that discussion with them this week, and I'm going to add on some questions about, you know, now that you're a college student, what could your high school and junior high school English teacher have done differently to better prepare you to use English? And also maybe ask them how do their teachers usually teach English? So I'm going to try to get some ideas from my students. And I'm going to do this openly. I'm going to tell them about my upcoming teaching job and just directly ask them for suggestions. So I'll let you know how that goes. And like I said, please, if you have any ideas or suggestions, I'd love to hear them. The other activity that I did last week, I'll go through this kind of quickly because it's pretty basic stuff. But we had been talking about money the previous week. And so I asked them, for homework, I asked them to write about why do you think we pay athletes so much money? Again, I didn't ask them to write because I want to see their writing, but it's the only way I have of making sure that they do something outside of class. And the only way that I have of making sure that they think about the questions that I want to talk about in class. So I had them write about that, and then we did some discussion questions when they got to class. That was the first discussion question. So why do you think we pay athletes so much? The next question that I asked them, well, I got some information and I'll put a link to it. I'll put the materials up on the site. Basically, it's a list of the highest paid athletes for 2007. And that is combining their salary plus their endorsements. So then I asked them a series of questions based on that information. I asked them, who do they think is the highest paid athlete? Who do they think is the highest paid non-American athlete? And who do they think is the highest paid female athlete? I also asked them to think about which sports and which countries would be in the top 10. And then finally, and again, here's where I tried to put in the critical question, I asked them, why do they think advertisers want to pay athletes or are willing to pay athletes so much money? I asked them all these questions before sharing the information I had brought in about athletes' earnings for 2007. So they were just guessing. And then as they shared their guesses and shared their answers to these questions, I shared the actual data with them. There were some interesting answers to the first question. Interesting, I guess, to me, maybe other people would have expected this, but as an American, you know, I was thinking about why do we pay athletes so much money? I was thinking about advertising. I was thinking about, you know, basketball, baseball, football. We glorify these individuals and make them larger than life, and there's all this idolatry and all this stuff. And then, but in China, it's different because the athletes that are famous and that get money are the Olympic athletes. So most of my student answers, they said things like, we pay athletes so much money because they increase the honor of a country, they represent the country, they train very hard. And I thought that was interesting because, yeah, Olympic athletes in America, at least in my understanding, aren't that well paid and aren't as famous as these the professional athletes. One thing that was funny, when they were talking about the highest paid non-American athlete, I knew that they would say Yao Ming, the basketball player, and they did. He's number 15, by the way. The highest paid non-American athlete was number 4. I don't remember his name, but he was a Spanish F1 driver. But anyways, the other guest they had for the highest paid non-American athlete was a guy named, I think his name was Liu Xiang. And, you know, in my first class, when they said that to me, I said, oh, who's he? And they couldn't believe it. They gasped. They literally gasped. So, of course, in my other classes, when they said that name, I did the same thing. I said, who's he? Just to get the reaction. And I guess he's a hurdler. And the idea of a hurdler being in the top 10 highest paid athletes in the world, I think, is pretty fantastic. But apparently, I guess he got a gold medal in 2004 and is a big, big hope for Beijing 2008. But yeah, he wasn't on the list of athletes that I saw. Students didn't really get very far with the last question. And admittedly, so the last question was, why do you think advertisers are willing to spend so much money getting athletes to endorse their products? I even cut that question from some of my classes because it wasn't getting any traction. The students weren't really making any headway with it. And, you know, they would say things like, it's because they're so healthy, or really, I think we just didn't have enough time to talk about it. I was trying to do too much in the class. But I think it's an interesting question, and there's definitely a way that these last couple of weeks with the advertising and the money and now the athlete stuff, those could all be kind of put together into a more cohesive whole, again, where I'm trying to build from something literal, something simple and concrete, to something more critical. And so I might try to restructure that if I want to use it again next year. Okay, the last thing I want to mention this week is a website. I found this website while I was just looking through some different environmental resources that I have. And I added a couple links if you go to the Global Issues Resources section of the website. But this website's called Dropping Knowledge. It's a little bit complicated to explain, and I'm not sure that I really understand it. But from what I can tell, it started with this thing called the Table of Free Voices. And basically what they did is they had 112 participants. Some of these participants were pretty famous too. And they gathered them all along or all around this big round table. And they asked them over a series of days, they asked them 100 questions. And each person had a camera in front of them. So each person answered these 100 questions. And they weren't talking to each other, right? They were just recording this for posterity, I guess. And so all of their answers and all of their videos are available on this website. And so you can choose a person or you can choose a question. You can see all the different answers and you can read the text of the answers. You can watch the video of the answers. It's pretty cool. And if students were interested in one of the questions or in one of the people, you could have there's a lot of material for them to look at. Another aspect of the website is basically, they've kind of opened it up to the world now where people make questions and the other members of the website answer those questions. And I was thinking that it would be kind of cool to have a class make a question and then use the answers as the content for that class. Like each day, bring in an answer or two and go through the vocabulary, talk about the grammar. You could make corrections if you need to. I just think that could be kind of a neat thing. And plus, students might get a kick out of seeing these responses from all over the world. Alternatively, and I don't know exactly how this would work, but the idea kind of came into my head of trying to do some version of the table of free voices as a class activity. So having students arranged in a circle, answering a series of questions, but I mean, both for language learning and because of resources, you'd have to have the students talking to each other. I don't think, unless your school is a lot different than mine, it wouldn't be feasible to have videotapes and all that stuff. But that might work. You know, you sit students around in a circle and each takes a minute or two to answer each question. But then you end up with, well, one student's talking, and if you have a class the way my classes are, then 49 are just kind of sitting there. And that's a kind of a waste of time too. But I really liked that idea of a bunch of people answering the same questions in different ways. And so maybe there's something there that you could use for a class activity. If you think of a good way to use it, please let me know. And again, I know I mentioned this before, but if you have any experience teaching teachers, especially in a country where they have the big exam culture, so maybe in Korea or Japan would work too, please let me know if you have any suggestions. I'd love to hear them. Oh yeah, and like I said, next week, hopefully, I'll redo the interview with Kira, so we'll have her talking about the secondhand gift exchange and her Earth Day activities that she's done as an English teacher here in China. I will do my best over the next few weeks to keep podcasts coming out as regularly as possible, but I will be pretty busy. And then for the summer, I'm actually going to be traveling, so there won't be any podcasts for a couple of months for July and August. But I'll try to have a couple more out before we leave. Thank you very much for listening. Please visit the website at eseletc.com. And until next time, bye-bye.